There's been another arrest in the police investigation into phone hacking. Our reporter John Minnell, as you would expect, is here, John.
Yes, a 71-year-old man walked into a police station in North London this morning, having made an appointment to do so, and at 10 to 11 he was arrested, not only after allegations concerning phone hacking, but also as part of the investigation into illegal payments to police officers. I can confirm that the man we're talking about here is Stuart Cutner, and he was a really important, really key figure at the News of the World. He was there for almost three decades, 29 years to be precise, and for 22 of those, he was the paper's managing editor. When he retired in 2009, the then editor of the paper, Colin Myler, described him as a man whose DNA is absolutely integrated into the newspaper.
And he's a voice PM listeners will be familiar with. We interviewed him several times down the years. What does a managing editor, what did that particular managing editor do?
Well, he described his job as being a bridge between the journalists and the management at the News of the World. He told MPs a few years ago that, for example, he would oversee the budget of the newspaper. When it comes to the paper's finances, the former chief executive of News International, Rebecca Brooks, told the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee last month, payments of private detectives would have gone through the managing editor's office. Now, he's been described as the closest the paper had to a public face because, as you say, he was the one who tended to do interviews with people like us. He was particularly associated with the paper's Sarah Law campaign to allow the public to have controlled access to the sex offenders register after the murder of Sarah Payne.
And that select club of former News of the World figures who've been arrested is becoming less select by the day.
He's the 11th arrest since the police launched its new investigation into phone hacking back in January. As managing editor, Stuart Cutner would have been answerable to Rebecca Brooks when she was editor of the paper. She's been arrested, of course. Her successor as editor, Andy Coulson, has been arrested. The man who is Mr. Coulson's deputy editor, Neil Wallace, was arrested last month. Then there are the former News of the World news editors, Ian Edmondson and James Weatherup, the former reporters, Neville Philbeck and Clive Goodman. So the police have been busy. All of those people I've mentioned are on police bail. Stuart Cutner, as I understand it, is still being interviewed.
John, thanks for that. Jonathan May Bowles, the man who assaulted Rupert Murdoch with a foamy pie, has been sentenced to 6 weeks in prison. Tim Greaves is from the law firm Hodge, Jones and Allen, which represented Mr. May Bowles in court. Will this teach your client not to assault people?
Mr. May Bowles had a very valid argument that he still stands by on the day in question. When he threw that pie, he was making a peaceful protest, harking back to protests of throwing pies back to the 1900s. I think this does provide a salutary lesson. However, Mr. May Bowles does maintain that he acted in a valid way and he felt that he had no other option.
He didn't deny assault?
He didn't deny assault, no.
So is this six-week sentence going to stop him assaulting people for whatever reason?
Well, it's interesting to note that he wasn't originally charged with assault. He was originally charged with a public order offence that would normally only attract a financial penalty. What's also quite interesting is that, unusually, the Crown Prosecution Service decided to pursue a charge of common assault, despite the fact that Mr. Murdoch, the victim in this case, did not want that to be pursued. Certainly, Mr. May Bowles doesn't intend to act in this way in the future. And as I said, it may provide some type of lesson. However, he does maintain that he acted in an appropriate way. Other people may take a different view. I certainly won't state my own views, but he knew what he was doing at the time would amount to a criminal offence. He knew the risks involved, and he was perfectly willing to be held accountable for that.
Did he expect to be going to jail? As I understand it, he had a statement ready and was going to read it on the steps of the court, but of course that couldn't happen.
Well, I don't know if that's the case, but this isn't a prisonable offence, as of course Mr. May Bowles now knows. He knew that before. He knew that there was a risk. The sentencing guidelines would suggest, and these are fairly new sentencing guidelines that are being rigidly applied throughout the courts in London, it would suggest that actually this would warrant more a community-based penalty rather than custody. And in fact, the indication that was given, although it was not a binding indication, but an indication that was given when he entered the guilty plea was that this was, falling more within the community order category rather than stretching into the higher category, which would justify a term of imprisonment.
I mean, we can't make direct comparisons, but when two Fathers for Justice campaigners threw condoms full of purple flour at Tony Blair during Prime Minister's questions, they were not jailed. Lord Mandelson was hit by green slime. The attacker got a police caution. Alistair Darling was once targeted by a creamy carrot cake, and there was no apparent police involvement.
No, quite right. In this case, it was always known that custody was a risk. However, the previous indications and the sentencing guidelines would suggest that a community order would have been appropriate. In this case, as I've already stated, the victim did not support the prosecution. Mr. May Bowles entered a guilty plea at the earliest opportunity and therefore will be entitled to the maximum amount of credit.
Are you going to be able to get him out?
Well, an appeal has now been lodged. An application for bail pending appeal was unfortunately unsuccessful. We will be looking to expedite the appeal to Southwark Crown Court. So we will certainly endeavour to do our best for our client, as we always do.
Thank you very much. Tim Greaves from Hodge, Jones and Allen. Where do old emails go? It's not something we tend to think about much. Press the delete button, perhaps empty your trash now and again. The email's gone, we like to think. But the story about the company based in India, storing hundreds of thousands of News International emails, got us wondering where all our old emails from work and home end up. Are they ever truly deleted? Professor Peter Sommer is a cyber security and digital evidence expert from the London School of Economics. Thank you for joining us. Thinking of people working in offices, sitting looking at their computer terminals, they decide to delete an email. What happens to it?
When you receive an email, you're getting it almost certainly from a server owned by your company. You connect to it with your own machine. When you delete it on your own machine, in the first instance, it simply goes into a deleted folder on your computer, and you will be able to retrieve it yourself. You can then delete material from the deleted folder, and although you won't be able to get it, a digital evidence specialist with appropriate tools will be able to recover it, at least for a while. In the meantime, some of the material will probably remain on your company's email server, and for how long depends partly on your actions and partly on the company's policies. Sorry that that's not a very clear answer, but the reality is it may be there, it may not be there.
And companies, when would companies send out a lot of their old emails and files to some other country to look after them?
I don't think you've quite understood the arrangement that we understand News International had. News International, like lots of other people, outsource a lot of their facilities to India because there are a lot of bright people who are willing to pay for work for a great deal less than we are. So the whole email management, as I understand it, is actually run from India.
And how much storage do they need in these places to look after deleted emails from some of our big companies?
Data storage is incredibly cheap. It's much more an operational decision. Now, then most of us will delete emails that we don't want because they're spam or they are junk. There are a number of requirements for keeping documents for a given period of time, not specifically emails, but anything to do with tax or the running of a company and anything that you might want to use in legal proceedings at a later stage. The problem is because the legislation doesn't refer specifically to emails. Everything that happens may be rather informal.
And just finally, I'm interested, can you, without blowing your own trumpet unnecessarily, can you pretty much always track down something if you really go for it?
What you have to bear in mind is where are the emails likely to have copies of? And the key thing is that emails, if they're being successfully delivered, will exist in two places, in your computer and also on the recipient's computer, and probably on a lot of intermediate computers as well. So the skill is in identifying where all those computers are and trying to, if people have tried to delete things, trying to work out where there may still be extant copies. And yes, people like me do have quite a surprising amount of success.
Thank you for sharing your skill with us for a while. Professor Peter Sommer, cybersecurity and digital evidence expert from the London School of Economics.